I've gone into big communities and talked about it. I've gone into temples where they've never ever talked about women's health so openly. It's been like a breakthrough for me, you know, like it gives me goosebumps just now, even just thinking how powerful it was.
Today, I'm joined by Lavina Mehta. She's an award-winning personal trainer, wellness coach, and best-selling author. Lavina will be talking about how her cultural and racial heritage affected her experience of menopause, both physically and socially.
How do South Asian women kind of experience menopause differently?
South Asian women will most likely go through the menopause 5 or 6 years earlier than the average white female. You know, when you're on your period, you're not allowed to actually even go into temples, into funerals. Like, periods have always been this quite shameful thing.
You went from being somebody that doesn't exercise at all to a qualified fitness instructor. How did that help you with your own symptoms?
11 minutes a day is a great target to aim for.
That's nothing, is it? I mean, it's just absolutely nothing.
And it's also 11 minutes you can break up.
Lavina, thank you so much for traveling across London and making it here today to talk to me. Thank you.
It's so worth it, Naomi.
So you went from being somebody that doesn't exercise at all to a qualified fitness instructor.
And then personal trainer.
Personal trainer. Yeah. And so how did that help you with your own symptoms?
Yeah, so I actually started my perimenopause around the age of 39 or 40, but at the time I didn't know it. And we know that research shows that South Asian women will most likely go through the menopause 5 or 6 years earlier than the average white female. So that could be 45 or 46, and that's very in line with my own experience. Mm. So when I started going through the symptoms, it was actually the same time as I'd just qualified as a personal trainer. And on my 40th birthday, all my life, my periods, my menstrual cycle was bang on time. And then on my birthday month in March, it just started going haywire. And I was thinking, you know, you kind of put things down to stress, or I'm doing something new, and it just must be life, right? And there was no awareness of what perimenopause was at the time. And it was during the COVID pandemic. So I'd kicked off all these new things going live.
Did you think maybe it was exercise? Did you think maybe it was?
I actually never thought, because I always used to think that if you over-exercise, your periods will stop. So for me, they were coming more frequently. It was a real pain. I was now in like gym wear all the time, and public facing and TV, radio, lives all the time. And not knowing if my period would just suddenly show up, which wasn't very convenient. Mm. So it was actually more frequent, and it was just irregular. So I remember they coming like after 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks. And then I started getting some anxiety, which I'd never, ever experienced before. And, you know, for me, it was a very different feeling. I did mention it before some of my lives on Instagram, and I remember a few friends messaging and asking, are you okay, Lavina? Like, we've never heard you talk about anxiety. But again, I just put it down to busy lifestyle. The brain fog was probably the most scary for me, Naomi, because my grandmother had Alzheimer's. Mm. And it's such a taboo still in the South Asian community. I do try and raise as much awareness as I can, working with Alzheimer's Society and, you know, on social media about dementia. But I know now with the research that I did that the changes in your brain do start in your midlife. And when I had the brain fog and I was just forgetting things, and, you know, my husband and my boys constantly saying, Mom, Lavina, you've forgotten things. Like, can't you just write things down? What's going on? That was pretty scary. And it was actually when I saw the Channel 4 documentary, Davina's documentary, that brought me to tears.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was the turning point, the light bulb moment, because I remember my husband and younger son were watching their football downstairs, and no one can come between them and Liverpool. It was a Liverpool match as well. And I was watching upstairs, and it just brought me to tears when I saw the changes in the brain and the scans from Dr. Lisa Moscone. Mm. And I was just like, oh my goodness. Like, I mean, it really terrified me. But they also, the penny dropped then, that I may be going through perimenopause. And I just burst into tears to the point where I was sobbing.
Why were you crying?
I was sobbing because I think it brought up a lot of the feelings seeing my grandmother right. in her last decade suffer so much to the point where she didn't recognize us. And, you know, it really had a lot of upheaval on my family, my mom, mm. and being South Asian, it was kind of not really talked about. It was a little bit hush hush. And we didn't really know, I think, as a family, how to deal with it the best. And in the end, she was put in a home and it was pretty heartbreaking. And I think it was just like pent up emotion, worrying about my brain that was my superpower. And, you know, being in the corporate world, like in my early 20s and being a global project manager and mainly sort of managing men that were white and older than myself. And I was always quite resilient. So when I felt like my brain was going, I was really concerned. And that's when the penny dropped. And that's when I went on Instagram the next morning, again, tearful, emotional. And I just declared that I'm South Asian woman, I'm 42, and I've just realized I'm in perimenopause. And when I said the word perimenopause, I mean, that got so much reaction of women that were DMing me, a lot from my own community that were DMing me about their own issues, but a lot of them were at rock bottom at that point. And, you know, I had heard some awful stories because we know how menopause can affect relationships to, you know, marriages and leaving the workplace, you know, which I feel very passionate about. And that's why I go into workplaces trying to think, you know, if I was still in that role, I would want that support from my employer. It was a real like pivotal moment when I declared it. And it was something, you know, that I never grew up talking about. Women's health in general is still a taboo in some cultures. But even growing up, I never really talked openly about my menstrual cycle or sex or let alone the menopause. It was just nothing that was really talked about. But it's been amazing to research the things that we can do through our lifestyle changes that can help manage these symptoms. Because you've seen, although I've experienced all these symptoms, I feel like the last 5 years have been the best 5 years ever.
Oh, that's great.
And I'm thriving. Yeah. And I want women to know. That's why I'm so passionate about emphasizing the importance of exercise, of nutrition, sleep, stress management, social connection, like all the things I've really researched. And now having written a book and actually got the studies, like, you know, hundreds of studies that are backing it, and having I've just been living and breathing all these tools. I want the world to know that whether you're an HRT or not, I feel like this has to be the foundation. And obviously women that choose not to be on HRT, there is a toolkit. There is things that you can do to hopefully navigate your way through this and hopefully to thrive and embrace it, right?
And you've mentioned a few times about the South Asian culture and not and things being taboo. Can you kind of expand on that? Like, how do South Asian women kind of experience menopause differently? And do you think that's changing?
I think it's always been like this taboo. It's definitely changed because now, you know, wherever I go, it's amazing. I meet South Asian women and men, which is even better, coming up to me saying, you know, thank you for sharing everything so publicly and that it is helping and you are breaking taboos. Or, you know, my husband and I once did a live. That was probably the worst live that I'll never, ever watch back. And, you know, he wasn't at first keen to come on, but I was trying to emphasize how important it is that we get men part of this discussion. And I said it would be really powerful to have a South Asian man actually talking to his wife about the menopause. And from him not wanting to be on it to us going to this like black tie function in the taxi.
So how did you persuade him to do it?
Oh my God. So I was in the taxi with him telling him that men are, you know, I know you're not public facing and I never planned to be. But the feedback that I've got from all these people, women, has been so incredible. And I really think you'll help people. And from him, like we were in this taxi going to this black tie event. We were literally dressed up fully. He was in his tux and he was saying, no, no, no. And then we walk in And he's like, okay, let's do it.
Oh, really?
Like, and so we sat down and we were just like, before this event, we just sat down and I put the camera on and, you know, one of my sons was actually watching us live and he was so encouraging. He was like, Mom and Dad, I'm so proud of you. But Menel really opened up and he really said, you know, about how, you know, Lavina's been going through all these symptoms and maybe I didn't also understand what she was going through. I mean, it was like very emotional. And he really opened up about our relationship, about, you know, some of the things that you probably wouldn't see a South Asian couple talking about. And the response was incredible, Naomi.
Like, positive.
It was so positive. Three couples have told him, obviously, in private, that you've saved our marriage.
Really?
Just from watching that. So a lot of our friends got their husbands to watch it as well, which I feel was, oh my gosh, that was quite powerful because he was so open. It's probably a little bit too open. So I don't, yeah, you can probably find it somewhere on my Instagram. But, you know, like we did have to get some help during our relationship. And that's another thing I feel, that therapy is not discussed. And a lot of relationships do, relationships are hard, let alone when your partner's hormones are constantly fluctuating. And it's hard for the woman to understand what's going on in your body, let alone being surrounded by boys and men like I am at home. So it's really important that we also normalize asking for help and talking about it. So, yeah, therapy was something that we talked about as well, that's helped us.
And is it the talking about it that's frowned upon, or do you think, or is it the actual therapy, or is it the actual menopause? Is it?
I think it's a bit of both, but I think it's the talking about it. It's a very tight community, and I don't think people share a lot in fear of judgment of others. So even if I put a post out where I'm talking about my brain fog or my periods being erratic or whatever, I will get the most engagement in my DMs because other people don't want people, their friends and their family, seeing, you know, what they're going through, right? Or it's them. So they don't like to be identified as such. I think also, you know, like we're both part of Menopause Mandate, and I've been in Parliament talking about the differences in South Asian women going through the menopause earlier. You know, for the last 3 years, I think I've been on stage talking about it so publicly in mainstream media and amazing on platforms like this. But I think the community also, you need this filtering down. So a lot of communities only trust areas like their own temples or their places of worship or their community centers. Maybe not everyone's on social media. And so that's another role. It's like I've gone into big communities and talked about it. I've gone into temples where they've never ever talked about women's health so openly.
And what's their reaction?
Oh my God, it's been a breakthrough for me. You know, like it gives me goosebumps just now, even just thinking how powerful it was. I've had women in tears, you know, coming up to me afterwards saying, I never realized, and thank you for sharing this, and I want to learn more. And it's just opening up that conversation, just getting women to have that confidence, to empower themselves with knowledge, you know, like read the books, like do your research, go to your doctor, ask for help.
How can we improve things?
We need, I think it's this trust. Like we need to be able to get these messages out to on these community levels. It's great, you know, when I first started out as a personal trainer, I didn't see any other South Asian personal trainer, let alone someone in their 40s out there. But I think now it's great because there's a lot more women, you know, South Asian women on social media talking about it. So, you know, I need everyone to be part of this. I can't just do it on my own. We see a lot of more representation on campaigns and brands. That's what I always say to big companies, to big platforms. We need to make sure that women see someone that looks like them and that they can relate to. And I, you know, I keep it very real. I'm like, I just kind of say it how it is and try and share as much as I can about my own experience as I possibly can, just in the hope that it will kind of relate to someone. So I am now a personal trainer, but as you know, that was never really planned. I actually qualified at the age of 40. I'm a mum to three amazing boys, and I actually had a role in the corporate world after I graduated. I was looking at the beautiful artwork around us, saying that my dream was actually to become an artist, but it wasn't, you know, the done career at the time. And being the eldest in a South Asian family, as I wasn't becoming a doctor or a lawyer or, you know, something that was more regarded as a proper profession. I fell in love with fitness very late, Naomi. So although I'm a personal trainer, it's not like I grew up loving exercise. I literally just used to do the tick in the box at school. But it was only in my 30s, after I'd given up my career to be mum to the three boys. So that's going back 17 years now. I joined the gym and I was probably double my size. And I often say I was definitely on the road to type 2 diabetes because...
I did not know that.
Yes, you haven't scrolled down my Instagram and seen the before and after pictures that I don't often show because obviously now it's really reframed what exercise is for me and what I want people, especially in midlife, to think about. It's not about how we look. So I don't post the transformations that often, but they're quite powerful. I joined the gym and it was only when I actually got myself a personal trainer that I started seeing some differences. And it was...
What made you join the gym in the first place?
Well, I joined the gym because I was double my size and I was feeling unhealthy. And obviously, you know, although I don't focus on weight these days, at the time, I do know how it made me feel. And I did lose some self-esteem. And I was just hoping to get a little bit healthier and a bit fitter. The physical transformation was brilliant, but it was all just through strength training. So rather than the typical gym classes that I was doing for about a year and then having coffee mornings with all the mums after drop-offs, it's only when I invested in my own personal trainer and he introduced me to this world of lifting weights that I had never touched. And it was nothing that I really grew up with. I think that's partly my culture, like being South Asian. There's always been such a lack of education and awareness. I never saw women, Indian women, lifting weights as I was growing up. But the physical transformation was one thing. It was more mentally what it did for me. And, you know, I always say exercise for sanity, not vanity. Mm. It's like my slogan now, but I truly believe that. That's what gave me a lot of strength to deal with life's hurdles and experiences that we all go through, things like grief and, you know, losing my dear father-in-law, who I lived with at the time, to a brain tumor very suddenly. It was really that movement and that focus when I was lifting weights that got me through those tough times. And I really wanted to learn about the science of exercise. I never thought I would sit exams again. Obviously, fast forward 5 years later, having done lots of free workouts during the pandemic, often three or four times a day. If I look back on that time, it's quite surreal.
And that's when it really kind of took off, isn't it?
Yeah, it was unplanned to be public facing. I never thought I would be on social media. But I had found this concept of exercise snacking back in 2018 when I was researching studies around movement. And I just picked up on it and I thought, oh my God, this is amazing, especially for me leading, you know, a busy life as a mum and juggling home and kids and work and whatever else I was doing. It's all about these sort of short bite-sized amounts actually do count. And when I read that even a minute or even a few seconds, and it's all backed by science.
So do you mind just explaining, because I think that is a really helpful concept. I think one of the barriers to women exercising, especially if they've never done it before, is the thought that it's going to take, you know, the best part of a morning or an afternoon by the time you've got ready, done what you're doing, had a shower and got ready for the next thing. But you break it down, don't you?
So I want everyone listening to know that every minute counts. And I think that's such a revelation. In fact, the more little exercise snacks that you do, and we can maybe talk through, you know, some examples of things, anytime you move, it's going to help boost your metabolism. There's studies to show it's going to help with your blood pressure, your cholesterol. So key health indicators. Maintaining a healthy weight is going to reduce your risk of so many chronic illnesses, as you know. And that's something I'm so passionate about. You know, I'm like an ambassador for Diabetes UK and Alzheimer's Society, Wellbeing of Women. And it's all about trying to make exercise accessible. So you don't need to have gym membership. I'm trying to break down all the barriers to exercise. So in terms of cost, you also don't need to have fancy equipment. This morning, I've just done, you know, my free live workout on YouTube with my amazing mother-in-law, and she's 77, and she started with me in the pandemic after I was dragging my husband and son out to do exercise snacks in the like daytime and the evening. That you can start off small, which is what I always say when it comes down to movement or exercise. It gives you that confidence just to make that start, and hopefully you will feel the incredible release of these, you know, feel good endorphins, your mood uplift. There's so many benefits of movement that we do feel quite quickly. And then it's just a stepping stone, because obviously I try to encourage people to do more. In my book, actually, I researched the fact that 11 minutes a day is a great target to aim for.
And that's nothing, is it? I mean, it's just absolutely nothing.
And it's also 11 minutes that you can break up. So you could do a couple of minutes here. And I like habit stacking. So I always try and get people to think about ways that we can tie onto existing habits. So you'll probably see, you know, I brush my teeth on one leg and the whole family sees me doing it. But balance is such an important thing that we start losing in midlife. And we want to reduce our risks of falls as we age. So we've got to start, I think it's this midlife that you start thinking about how you want to live and your health span versus your lifespan and how independent you want to stay. I know that's, for me, it's kind of been a big driver as I see my parents getting older and we're in this sandwich generation. To things like doing squats and press-ups against the kitchen counter when the kettle's boiling. So it just becomes, it's like second nature for me. You know, when the kettle's on or when the broccoli's steaming or something's going on, I now add in these little snacks. And what's great is that I know that they all count. And they're just adding extra benefits the more you do. And it doesn't mean having to do something really intense. Like I have what I call the feel good fitness prescription. As a doctor, you'll probably, you know, like love this.
Yeah. We used to kind of discuss that when I was a GP, that's exactly the kind of thing that we would discuss with patients. Yeah.
The lifestyle medicine, right? But, you know, it could just be some mobility. Like we're all sitting for too long. And the research shows that the average person sitting for, you know, 10 to 12 hours a day in the UK. And for me, it's about how I can encourage everyone to just get up, maybe every hour, ideally. But even if you really aim for 30 minutes, and that's 3 minutes every 30 minutes, the studies that I researched, you know, when I was writing my book are incredible. And that was not just things like reversing type 2 diabetes. The 3 minutes every 30 minutes was actually a study on type 1 diabetics as well. So just helping us manage our blood sugar levels. You know, we become more insulin resistant in midlife. And I always hear women, you know, the first thing they ask me when I say I'm a personal trainer is, how do I get rid of the dreaded belly fat and that menopot that I've called it? And I'm very open and honest about, you know, my perimenopause as well. And I've experienced so many of these things. But there's so many tools that we can have, whether it's exercise snacks or the mental health snacks that I call them, things like breathing techniques, to journaling, to just going out in nature, to the kind of self-care snacks that I say, you know, about how we should be hopefully just giving ourselves those few minutes to help us manage our perimenopause and menopause, but also know that we're future-proofing our bodies in the long term.
Yeah, it's just so alien to our kind of modern Western culture, isn't it? The kind of, we're just so into this kind of go, 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 go. You sit, or you run and you grab something to eat and you don't really think about what it is and you do it all very quickly.
Yeah.
So you're not thinking about what you're doing with your body or what you're putting in your mouth. But it isn't actually rocket science, is it?
It's not. And I think, you know, that is our fast-paced modern lifestyles. And then obviously our stress levels, for me, stress management is a huge focus of what I want people to hopefully try and reduce our cortisol levels, which will help with things like belly fat and that, you know, lovely area that we get in midlife, to just having that time to kick in your parasympathetic nervous system. Like I always kind of think about, you know, things that we could even do in a minute that you can just do anytime in the workplace or on the train or on your commute. But we do need to try and feed in, although our lives are so hectic, these little moments where we do something for our bodies and our minds. And the benefits are so huge. They're not about what we can see. It's about all the magic that happens inside, right?
And what did you do after you realized, like, did you think about HRT? Did you use exercise? What was your like management strategy?
So exercise has always been number one, because I know, you know, like I touched on when I was dealing with grief and some of the more challenging times in my personal life. And that has always been, luckily, the kind of key component. And I want every woman to know, you know, from your 30s, how important strength training is. And I wish I'd known earlier, but it's never too late with the 70, 80, 90 year olds I saw, you know, on YouTube and Zoom join me this morning. We start losing our muscle mass and bone density from the age of 30. And strength training is not just incredible for obviously weight loss, because the more muscle mass you have, the more calories you are going to burn. It's great for your blood sugar levels. It's an antidepressant. I mean, the benefits are huge. It's going to help you reduce your risks of so many chronic illnesses in the long term. So strength training has been the foundation, but added in that with a more holistic approach, because, you know, I'm kind of like snacking on things like mobility and stretches and self-care. Walking has been my therapy as well. So I continued all of the lifestyle stuff. The food obviously plays a huge part. And I really want to say that it's, you know, I've never dieted. You know, you've been out for dinner with me and I'm a huge foodie. And that's probably thanks to my mum as well, as a chef and cookery writer. But it's about really nourishing, not depriving our bodies. And I try to work on my sleep, you know, with the lifestyle stuff. So there's a lot of things that we can do that really helped my sleep. Stress management, you know, I touched on breathing techniques. When I found out that it takes 1 minute to reset your nervous system, and I'm not talking about sitting for hours and having that time to maybe meditate, which I would love to do. But for me, it's about little tools I have in my toolkit that, you know, before coming on something like this or anything that I just want to recharge or refocus, or I'm feeling a little bit worried about, you know, we can do these little simple 1 minute mindful minutes, breathing breath snacks that I call them. HRT, I then did go on, Naomi. I felt like it was the right thing to do because I was in that space surrounded by everyone that was on HRT. I've had quite a different journey on it. I was on it for about 15 months and I just felt at the beginning, actually, I decided I wasn't great with tablets. So I did a combined patch, and obviously everyone's journey is so different. So we have to caveat, you know, don't listen to what I took and think that will influence what you take. And I obviously outweighed, the benefits outweighed the risks, and I was already leading a healthy lifestyle. So I did the combined patches knowing that there's a slightly higher risk. It wasn't the optimum level of HRT where you would have progesterone orally and my estrogen through the skin. But I tried that for a few months and I just felt like it didn't agree with me. And I think psychologically, in the back of my mind, I was thinking, I want to go for the lowest risk, like the safest, most recommended option.
Right.
And you have
that,
to.
That is a good, it is a good HRT.
Yes.
The one that you're describing is an Everol combined patch, which has got an estrogen and a progesterone in it. So it's really easy.
Yes.
But I suppose the progesterone in that is not the body identical micronized progesterone that is kind of what we think of as being gold standard. But but some people love that product, just as a kind of caveat.
Yeah, and I think because I had no like health issues, where's the word, and I was like low risk and I was doing all the lifestyle stuff. I have to admit, when I first went on HRT, I was, you know, reading books, absorbing stuff from everyone like yourselves that were around me. I was quite educated. So I was kind of guiding my GP because, you know, they did have a lack of training. And we know that we've come lots of steps forward in terms of training GPs more on the menopause. But I was probably advising her. And then I think I remember speaking to you at Parliament saying, it's probably when I switched to the body identical. And I just wasn't, you have to give everything 3 to 6 months. And I just wasn't feeling my best with that. Mm. I was getting a lot of bloating. I was still getting erratic bleeds. So that was, to me, it was like the one thing I wanted to nip in the bud, being a personal trainer and live on camera all the time, was the periods. And it wasn't helping my periods. I was getting headaches. The sleep wasn't as great. So I was a bit disheartened because I could see everyone around me having this magic overnight fix. And it wasn't happening for me. It wasn't the silver bullet that I heard about. But I persevered. And then I said to her, let's try and maybe I'm not absorbing estrogen. And we know that, I guess, blood tests, you can correct me if I'm wrong, aren't the best indicator. But I did have blood tests done and they were sometimes showing very low amounts of estrogen. Mm-hmm. I then said, should we up my estrogen? I was like, maybe I'm not absorbing it. And so I tried to up the estrogen, but I just felt awful. Like not only the breast tenderness, the point where I couldn't get anyone near me or hug me, but it just didn't go. Mm. And then I actually spoke to my mum and something in my gut was saying to me, let me ask my mum about the menopause. I've never really talked to her about it. And she was always shrugging it off like it was fine. You know, I just carried on, I trooped on like women did in her time. And they were just so busy. You know, my parents had come to the UK in the 60s and they were all about like, what can we do to give our children the best upbringing and education and all of that. So she probably did put herself last. When I asked her, what age did you go through the menopause? She was like, oh, I sailed through it, you know, at the age of 46, around 46. And I was thinking, okay, I'm like 45. And something in my gut, Naomi, was like, I've done 15 months of trying things out. I just want to see what my body's doing. I just want to see if the periods are still crazy. So I said to the GP, I'm going to just have a bit of time out. And I think that's maybe when I spoke to you. I remember speaking to another doctor in our space, like in confidence, just saying, maybe I just give my body a bit of time just to see what's going on. Mm. And for me personally, because I am not anti-HRT at all, I think it has worked wonders in like 80, 90% of the women that I know. For me, it was a blessing because I then, my periods just stopped. Mm-hmm. And I've now gone through a year without my periods.
So, and a year without being on HRT.
And over a year without being on HRT. So it's actually been now 15 months. So I gave it a bit of grace. Like I thought, okay, oh my gosh, I've hit the menopause. And I just gave it a few extra months just to make sure, you know, I don't get another bleed or nothing else. And in that time, you know, I've published the book and I've got on with things and I've found a toolkit. I actually do feel the best I feel that I have in 5 or 6 years. And it's not because I came off HRT. I think it's because something in my gut was telling me that, Lavina, you're South Asian and you may go through things earlier. And I think I probably wouldn't have seen the fact that I'd gone through the menopause unless I'd stopped and just seen what my periods were doing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You don't know. If you're taking HRT, you don't know where you are.
It creates a bleed, right? So I wouldn't have...
Depending on which preparation on. So if you take the progesterone continuously, you won't. But if you take it as a cycle, then you will. But also you're more likely to get erratic bleeding if you take continuous progesterone but your body's not quite ready for it, then you will get erratic bleeding and maybe that's where you were. But sometimes HRT causes bleeding. That's one of the side effects. Not everyone will get it, but it is a pretty common side effect. And interesting that you feel better, probably because you are no longer having hormonal turbulence. Because your ovaries aren't doing anything.
Yeah, probably. And I mean, it's bizarre. Like I don't usually post things like this, but, you know, I went into the gym and I did this sort of body tracks, this whole measurement thing that I hadn't done in a while. And obviously I'm so about building muscle mass and protecting our bones and our hearts. The stats have been probably the best that I've had in a long time. I'm feeling my best. I'm actually planning, and you're invited, Naomi, I'm planning to have a menopause party. I want it to be a celebration. I want to actually reframe this, especially for women in my community, that this can be, like, for me, it's been a midlife reinvention, right? With my career and finding a passion later in life, and never ever imagining that I'd be doing this or sitting here with you talking about all these things. I want women that may be feeling low to hopefully feel inspired to do something. And I want menopause parties, like, hopefully this is the first of its kind. It's like, it's only going to happen to me once. I'm going to celebrate it because I'm feeling so positive and strong. And I want it to be like a baby shower or a hen party.
No more periods?
No more periods. That's been the best thing. I can wear white without worrying. I can wear whatever I want. I can travel wherever I want. Yeah, it's been really liberating. And actually, you know, when we talk about periods in culture, periods have always been this quite shameful thing, especially I'm Jain, so I'm stricter than the Hindu religion. And, you know, when you're on your period, you're not allowed to actually even go into temples, into funerals. Like, if you're, you know, someone near you has been praying, you're not even allowed to kind of maybe hug them. So for me, periods have been quite a shameful, hidden thing. This feels very liberating. I don't know, I've got no more periods.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's really positive. I want there to be positivity around hitting this point in life. It's not the old, you know, the woman that you stereotypically used to see. I'm in pink.
I'm bright.
I'm vibrant. I'm going to be.
You're glowing.
Oh God, I'll be out there, and I'm just going to try and enjoy the journey. Like, who knows what life has in store for me?
So, Lavina, do you mind just helping me answer a couple of questions from our listeners?
I will give it a go.
So the first one is Chelsea says, my perimenopause has been an absolute nightmare. Night sweats, brain fog, insomnia, mood swings. HRT has helped, but I wanted to take a break from it. And I think I must be hitting menopause as I haven't had a period for 8 months. What does this mean for symptoms going forwards? Will they disappear altogether once I am through menopause?
I want to ask you the same. So thank you for asking that question, Naomi.
So it sounds like she's on HRT. And but she hasn't had a period, so it's difficult to know what kind of HRT she's on. If she's on a continuous HRT, then it's totally appropriate that she wouldn't have had a period. If she's on a cyclical HRT, where you take the progesterone for half the month, then you would expect one, but it doesn't matter if you don't have one. It's probably just your body's way of saying, actually, you should be on a continuous HRT. If you want to try stopping HRT, then that is absolutely fine. If you stop HRT and you have your periods come back, it means you're very much still in perimenopause. And if you stop your HRT and you go for a year without a bleed, then you are postmenopausal. That's how it works. And will your symptoms come back if you stop HRT? Often, but not always. And it will depend on where you are. If you're still in perimenopause, then they probably will, because you've still got that hormonal turbulence. If you're postmenopausal, they may still, but they may not.
Ooh, million-dollar question. Yes. I mean, I guess even touching on like hot flushes, because I guess listeners, you know, that is the stereotypical menopausal symptom, even though we know there's so many now. Just to throw it out there, I did a bit of research about hot flushes when I was writing the book, and there's studies to show that moderate intensity aerobic activity, so like going for a walk, cycle, swim, and resistance training can actually help reduce hot flushes. So that's something that I've just been keeping as part of my toolkit as well. Have you heard that as well?
Yeah, there are definitely things other than HRT that can help control hot flushes. It's difficult to know whether it actually reduces the extent of the hot flush or whether it reduces the extent of the distress that the hot flush causes. But actually, it doesn't really matter. You know, if you are less distressed as a result of a symptom, it doesn't really matter, because we see that with cognitive behavior therapy as well.
Yes.
So it doesn't get rid of the hot flushes, but what it can do is reduce or eliminate the distress that the hot flush causes. And then if you are less distressed, you're then less likely to experience hot flushes, because you get hot flushes can be stress related.
Yeah.
So it's all quite kind of chicken and egg.
I think it's a distress bit, right? Because that's when I use things like the breathing to try and, if I was having a hot flush in the night, I will be just focusing on my breath and trying to calm the body and the mind. So yeah, really interesting, but so different for everyone.
So different for everyone. And then the last one is from Hannah, who says, I am deep in perimenopause and know that exercise can help, but I am getting terrible joint pain in my knees and my ankles. Can you suggest any gentle exercise that won't add stress? FYI, I'm not an active person, so something easy to fit into my busy life is a must.
So I hear a lot about joint pain. It's so common. I did actually experience it myself, and I had quite severe knee issues during the pandemic when I was doing all these lives and going through perimenopause myself. Research is showing that actually motion really is lotion. And I always talk about how important it is to add mobility and stretching to our, you know, workout fitness routines. Because we have synovial fluid around the joints. So just simple drills. I know she's touched on, was it knees and ankles? But, you know, like I think anyone, anytime, whenever you're sitting, I often show these in my free YouTube workouts with my mother-in-law. There's hundreds saved. But simple drills like circling out your ankles. I'm doing it now in my slippers. Would you know me? Circling my slippers are not great to see, not as fancy as yours. So circling out your ankle rotations. You could even do simple calf raises. I'm just thinking about things that I could do right now when I'm sitting. They're like little calf push-ups. Also leg extensions. So if you want simple movements where you're literally lifting your leg out straight in front of you and you can feel your quadriceps, which are at the front of your thighs, actually start engaging. And obviously it's a little bit of strength training, pointing and flexing. What I'm saying is try and keep moving. Mm. And the movement studies also show is actually beneficial for joint pain. Obviously listen to your body and only do things if you're not in pain. Sit and stands or squats, as I say, are probably the most important exercise for your lower body. So we do want to strengthen all the muscles around the knees, but taking that as literally as a sit and stand rather than thinking about I've got to go into a gym and lift a barbell and do a squat. So start off small, just like little exercise snacks is probably my best tip. And make sure you're always warming up. So do mobility drills before you do any type of strength training. And similarly, at the end of any exercise, make sure that you're stretching. But I think the beauty of exercise snacking is that, you know, you could just add in a few of these things, whether you're stuck on meetings, you know, back to back, which is what I always encourage people at work to do. Or if you're just sitting on the sofa at night, it's just trying to add these little drills into your
doing it whilst you're doing whatever else you're doing, and you can just do it without even thinking, can't you? It
becomes part of your lifestyle then. I also hear people talking about back pain, neck pain, shoulders, because probably we're rounding our backs. It's like that kyphosis in the spine.
So straight.
We're just like just sitting, right? And obviously midlife, actually, women are more sedentary. We're now sitting at our desks so much. And even if you're just using your phone, your head is looking down, right? So simple drills, you know, anyone watching, listening, do join in with us. I have something that I call the desk reset snack in my book, and it's just the analogy of a desk shape. So if you just lift your shoulders up and then back an inch or two and then down, so you're going like a little desk shape. Do you want to give it a go, Naomi? Okay. You're going up, back and down. So hopefully there your shoulders blades are squeezed together at the back, your chest is lifted, your posture's, it's like a little posture check that also makes you feel a bit more confident and proud and a little bit taller. And then simple rotations again, so mobilizing the neck, just like little head circles, couple in each direction, maybe adding them into your shoulders. And then one of my favorite ones is actually to grab a belt or a resistance band or a pair of old tights like I did in the pandemic. And it's called a shoulder floss. So you literally are trying to rotate your arms up and over, both at the same time with a bit of resistance these are just like simple drills that I would love people to do daily and just sprinkle in when you get a moment.
Brilliant. Genius.
Oh, gosh.
Thank you so much for listening. If you've enjoyed this chat, please do let me know by leaving a comment or review. A massive thank you to everyone who has followed this podcast already.